equal rights or religious liberty? Just ahead, Speaker Toni Van Pelt gives us a preview of her talk tonight in Jacksonville, looking at the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Good Monday morning and live from Studio 5. This is First Coast Connect on 89.9. Thanks for listening. I'm Melissa Ross. The show is always live at 9, and now you can subscribe to the daily podcast on iTunes and Stitcher. Also, watch the show video on demand at tvjax.com. Just ahead, we take your calls on the Religious Freedom Restoration Act and Florida. Get on the line now, 549-2937. Then later, February is American Heart Month. We'll tell you about a cutting-edge new treatment option for heart patients in this area. Plus, the Armada claim the title of Kings of Florida Soccer. Culpepper with all those highlights. All of that and more coming right up this morning. But first this hour, on Saturday, Jacksonville City Councilman Tommy Hazzouri announced he's going to suspend his push to adopt local discrimination protections for the city's LGBT community. Hazzouri is withdrawing his bill that would amend Jacksonville's human rights ordinance to protect those citizens from discrimination in jobs, housing, and public accommodations. Now, the move means this divisive local issue will probably be put on the back burner, at least for now, leaving Jacksonville one of the largest major cities still lacking legal protections for this community. The HRO has been controversial over the years, in large part because opponents have raised religious objections to the legislation. We've also seen the debate over rights versus religious liberty at the national level. In 2014, the Supreme Court ruling in Burwell versus Hobby Lobby stores recognized a for-profit corporation's claim of religious belief. Following that ruling, many states, including Florida, have since proposed expanding state religious freedom laws to include for-profit corporations and also religious institutions. Toni Van Pelt is co-founder, president, and lobbyist for the Institute for Science and Human Values. She'll be speaking tonight in Jacksonville about these Religious Freedom Restoration Acts and what she calls dangers to secular society. Toni Van Pelt, thanks for being on the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
And what are your thoughts about religious liberty and the Religious Freedom Restoration Act? Give us a call, 549-2937. That's 549-2937. Or go online to wjctnews.org/firstcoastconnect. Email and tweet us. We're already getting your comments on our Facebook page. We'll get to those in a moment. This is a preview you're giving us right now of your talk tonight, courtesy of the First Coast Free Thought Society. And your focus is on the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Now, this national act has been a law for about 20 years, isn't that right?
President Bill Clinton signed it into law in 1996. And it started with a case in Oregon and unemployment with Native Americans who wanted to use peyote on the job. And they were fired. And they applied for unemployment, and the state of Oregon denied them. And they sued the state based on their religious freedom, saying that the use of peyote was a part of their religious ritual. And they lost. And they lost again and again and again until they got up to the United States Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court ruled in favor of the state, saying that although government could disregard civil law in favor of religion, they did not have to. And that ruling caused a firestorm in the Congress with Democrats and Republicans alike, and they wrote the Religious Restoration Freedom Act.
At the state level, we've seen a number of efforts to advance religious freedom laws, including here in Florida, where the Pastor Protection Act, as it's known, is aimed at preventing lawsuits against churches for refusing to perform same-sex marriages. That is moving ahead in the Florida House and Senate. So you'll be giving a talk tonight in Jacksonville about these issues, and you'll be taking the position that you're opposed to these types of measures.
Yes, because once again, we're looking at laws that are couched incorrectly with the wrong language. When we talk about religious freedom, we're talking about the Establishment Clause in the First Amendment. And what that says, and the way that we've practiced this since the founding of the nation, is that government should remain neutral when it comes to religion, so they don't favor religion and they don't disfavor religion, and also those who are non-religious.
It's 549-2937. Let us know your thoughts on this discussion as we discuss the activists on one side arguing for equal rights, people of faith on the other claiming religious liberty. We'll go to your calls in a moment at 549-2937. And as we bring it down to the local level here in Jacksonville over the weekend, the leading proponent for expanding Jacksonville's human rights ordinance in this city, Tommy Hazzouri, former mayor, city councilman, announced he's going to withdraw his legislation. The loudest opponents of that legislation were those from local churches and faith-based organizations, saying that they were concerned that if the legislation passed, for example, their religious liberty might be infringed upon, say, if a faith-based VPK had to accept children of gay parents. That's one example that was cited. Other concerns raised had to do with bathrooms, transgender individuals being allowed to go into bathrooms of the other gender. What's your reaction to that?
That always just reminds me, that's so 20th century, that argument. When it reminds me of Phyllis Schlafly and the ERA, and her big fear about that was that we would have bathrooms that both genders used, you know, just like the ones we have in our homes. So I think that that's just a smoke screen.
What would you say to those listening, particularly those of deep religious faith, who've seen the passage of same-sex marriage? It's now the law of the land, coast to coast. And they see other measures such as the human rights ordinance. There was also a measure in Tallahassee to cover all of Florida's LGBT citizens from discrimination. That failed. That didn't make it out of committee. What would you say to those listeners who feel that they are being discriminated against, that their beliefs are the ones that are being prevailed upon?
Well, I think that those the religious folks who they, you know, everybody has their individuals all have different beliefs, and we need to be respectful of others' beliefs. And so there are people who don't believe in the supernatural, and we don't want to have folks pushing their beliefs on others. It's just not the American way. It's not a part of our secular democracy.
It's 549-2937. Give us a call as we speak with Toni Van Pelt of the Institute for Science and Human Values, a preview of her talk tonight on the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. A new Southern Poverty Law Center report profiles a national campaign to enact state religious freedom laws. We're seeing this in many states, including here in Florida, where the Pastor Protection Act, as I mentioned, passed on a near party line vote. You agree with the SPLC's report that this movement is a strategy to deny equality to LGBT citizens, and you've also drawn the parallel between this LGBT movement for full equality and the movement of the civil rights era. Can you explain a little bit further about why you draw those parallels?
Well, I think what's going on is they're using these laws that they're starting to enact to do away with civil law, the Civil Rights Acts. That's what this is about. Religious organizations want to use taxpayers' dollars, taxpayers' funding to discriminate in hiring, to discriminate, for instance, if they, and not for hiring to do work in their churches, but for providing services to taxpayers. So they had to set up separate 501c3s, think Catholic Charities, Lutheran Services, and the Salvation Army in the old days. And they had to keep separate checkbooks, so they kept federal funding separated from church funding. They could not discriminate in hiring. They couldn't provide the services in rooms that had religious icons on the walls, and they couldn't make the beneficiaries, the taxpayers, pray to receive their benefits. They couldn't proselytize. Well, they're trying to do away with all of these things and keep the taxpayers' money, and that's just wrong.
What was your reaction to the Hobby Lobby decision? The 2014 Hobby Lobby decision.
It's just so sad. I mean, that is the discrimination against women. And that's a big piece of this. It's the LGBT community. It's women. They don't want to hire women, perhaps, that are unmarried, that have children. They don't want to hire people that are not of the same faith. They don't want to hire people that that just don't believe exactly the way they believe. In fact, I was just speaking to somebody after I gave this talk who was telling me that she had applied for a job with Habitat for Humanity. And they made to be able to be hired for this job, she had to sign a statement saying that she was a Christian, and she was not a Christian, so she was denied the job.
what about the argument that if it's a private corporation not taking taxpayer money, Hobby Lobby is a private corporation, the high court fell on the side of giving private corporations wide latitude to hire and set workplace policies as they see fit. What about that argument?
Well, the thing is that we're right back to like Citizens United, where they're looking at, are corporations really people? I mean, is that really what our democracy is about? I don't think so. And it's the same thing. They are forcing their religious views on everybody else in our society. And that's just not the way. Those aren't American values. That's not the way we roll in America.
And let's go to your calls right now as we speak with Toni Van Pelt, a preview of her talk tonight in Jacksonville on the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. What are your thoughts? What are your questions? 549-2937. Amy in St. John's. Hi, Amy. Good morning.
Hi. I have a couple comments about this topic. It's something I feel very passionately about, because if you think about the problem we've had with the country of Iran, so much of it is because that country is run by their religion. Not because they run by a democracy, a true democracy, it's because they're run by the religion. And how far can we get to the edge before we just fall off the cliff and have the same problem with our country? The second comment I'd like to make is, what rights are any of these religious people losing by having an equal right for other people, whom the Bible clearly says, Jesus clearly taught that we are supposed to reach out to everyone and love our brothers and our sisters and our enemies? So I'll take my response
offline. All right, that's Amy in St. John's.
I have to say, it reminds me, I used to have this bumper sticker for decades on my car, and it said, when religion ruled, it was called the Dark Ages. And I think that's where we're headed for if we don't stop this in its tracks.
You're a secular person.
I am.
Yeah, you don't have a deeply held religious faith.
I don't believe in the supernatural.
And it's 549-2937 as we take your calls on this topic with Toni Van Pelt, Susan in Neptune Beach. Hi, Susan.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I was just listening and heard that someone had been turned down for a job through Habitat. I have been working with Beaches Habitat as a volunteer since 1991. The one thing that we can rave about with Habitat is we do not discriminate in any way for our home applicants or for our employees. So something was really radically wrong with whoever told you that information. So we rave about the fact that we are a Christian organization, but you do not have to be a Christian in order to apply for a home or to work in our organization.
Well, yeah, thank you, Susan.
You're talking about actually your experience as being a volunteer and for people in their homes, but what she was talking about was actually being employed, and I think that's the difference here.
Okay, and it's 549-2937. Let's go to a few of your emails, tweets, and Facebook comments on this topic. Lisa tweets the show, when it comes to Hobby Lobby, I think of my dollar as a vote, and I exercise my beliefs by voting not to shop there. Here are a couple of comments on our Facebook page. Here's one from Richard. What about my religious freedom? I deserve to live in a society that avoids forcing the beliefs of others on me. If a church tries to force its beliefs on me, I can simply walk away. But if a whole society tries to do the same thing, we're talking about a theocracy. And the earlier caller referenced Iran as an example of a theocracy where everyone is basically compelled to be part of the same faith. There is no real separation between church and state. Here in the West, we do have a separation between church and state, Toni. But what you're arguing, is it fair to say that in your point of view, that strict line, that bright line between church and state has become slightly blurred in recent years?
Oh, I'm arguing more than that. I'm saying that we have to open our eyes that that strict line is long gone, that within the government, within our public policy, we are not using empirical evidence. We are not using scientific data any longer. We are using religious dogma in public policy, and that is really, really bad.
And what examples do you see of that? You used to lobby the Congress. You're now based here in Florida, but what examples can you give?
Well, actually, I am still lobbying the Congress even here in Florida, and the examples I can give is that the Office of Legal Counsel, which resides inside the Justice Department and our attorneys, used RFRA to give an exception to the World Vision Church so that they could discriminate in hiring. So they forced their employees to sign the Christian Creed and other things to work for them using taxpayers' dollars. This is going on today in every single federal agency. Discrimination is allowed. We have faith-based offices in our state embassies around the world. We have instituted faith-based offices there to train our diplomats on how to work with religions in those countries affecting public policy there.
Let's go to a few of your Facebook comments and tweets. Here's one from Susan. Religious entities should not be able to scream religious freedom in an attempt to skirt the law and harm others. RFRA, that's the Religious Freedom Restoration Act, should not be expanded. For example, take tax-deductible donations. Any 501c3 gets the benefit, not just religious entities. The rules should be the same for religious and non-religious charities, equal treatment. Is it your argument you don't believe that these rules are equally applied? Because when you talk to faith-based organizations, it's really striking. There's a strong sense they feel as though they're under siege, that the rules are being applied unfairly to them.
Well, yes. And so all of these years, and I think I said this earlier, government is to remain neutral. But what they're saying now and what they were saying in RFRA is that the fact that government is neutral is disfavoring religion. So this is just turning language on its head. It's just wrong.
Here's a tweet from Mike. The notion that ministers could be forced to marry anyone defies history. What minister ever married anyone without full agreement? That's a reference to the Pastor Protection Act, which is on track to being passed in the legislature.
And I'm sure that it's going to be signed into law. We have a number of things. You know, Florida signed its own state RFRA in 1998, when the one came down in 1996, 23 states did. But what they're doing now with this is they're expanding that to make it even worse.
What do you mean, even worse?
Well, just this protecting pastures. And it's not just going to be protecting pastures. It's going to be protecting businesses. It's going to come down to where discrimination is going to be instituted as the law of the land. And that's what we're really so concerned about. And it's not just about same-sex marriage. It's about anything. They are, and this is really, really key, they are moving away from just religious refusal to moral objection. So taking it out of that so that anybody can say, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to fulfill your birth control prescription because I'm morally opposed to birth control, not even necessarily religiously opposed.
What about the argument that exemptions can be carved out for private entities with strong beliefs while at the same time expanding legal protections?
I don't even know how that could be possible because what's happening, and for instance, when it failed in the Congress, when Bush was in office and they started to institute charitable choice within law, we lobbied against that. The coalitions lobbied against that. And by and large, we won. So George Bush then moved it into the executive branch. And that's when he started the faith-based initiatives and started moving it in that way and using that money. So they just dodge everything and move it around. And then they started making exemptions to the laws, with World Vision was the first one. And that was supposed to be the only one they were going to make the exemption for. But then they said, when Obama came into office, we're going to do this on a case-by-case basis. So then more and more religious organizations wrote in for exemptions to be able to discriminate in numerous ways. And so we applied for FOIAs, Freedom Information Acts, to find out who were these organizations, how many of them were. And we were just stalled. Even today, we don't know how many have religious exemptions.
But Bud in St. Augustine. Go ahead, Bud.
Hey, how are you doing this morning?
All right, go ahead.
I agree 100% with your guest. And I really believe that this whole so-called faith-based thing, which I hate that word, faith-based, it means absolutely nothing. Religious exemptions are just an excuse for bigotry and discrimination. And, you know, we live in an era where everybody is angry and offended by everything. We have, you know, cable news channels and AM radio and doing nothing but manufacturing right-wing anger all day. And, you know, everyone's dainty little feelings get hurt over any change. And, you know, I think it's the worst thing that could ever happen to this country. And as soon as Bush started this whole faith-based stuff 15 years ago or whatever, 10 years ago, I knew we were headed down a slippery slope. And I don't think there's almost any way out of it now. And that's really all I have to say. But, you know, God help us, save us from your followers. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Bud. And we welcome all calls on this program, people who agree with Bud and people who disagree. We want to hear from you. Tom on the West Side. Go ahead, Tom.
Yes, thank you. Good morning. Well, what I wanted to observe first off here is our Constitution actually grants us freedom of religion. It seems like your guest is really angling for freedom from religion. The second thing, on her claim that religion is distorting our policy, I think, at least in terms of global warming, which is the biggest thing that's going on currently, it's greed rather than religion. I mean, they may cloak it in their biblical beliefs, but it's all financial. And finally, to get to the crux of this, the human rights ordinance, I think the human rights ordinance should read that discrimination is wrong in any form and just leave it at that.
Thanks for the call, Tom. Tony
well,
Van Pelt.
The Establishment Clause of the First Amendment says that government will not favor or disfavor religion. So, and that the government needs to remain neutral. So it's not freedom for religion or of religion, because it also protects those who are non-religious.
Kay in Jack's Beach. Go ahead, Kay.
Hi, I've never called in before, and I wanted to tell you I'm a big fan, but today's topic really kind of hit a nerve with me. Mm-hmm. I was offered a job and had accepted it, and when I went to meet with the owner of the company, his third question was what church I attended and what my religious beliefs were. And because I answered him honestly, I was then, the position was rescinded. I was no longer given a job that I had left another job for.
What was the job? Can you tell us?
It was a regional sales position.
Okay.
I honestly don't want to badmouth anybody, so I'd not like to use any specific names, but just the fact that I was too scared to speak up because of the area that we live in geographically, I mean, this really devastated my life for several months. And I just felt like it's sad that we feel like there's no recourse. Like, I thought I would have been made a pariah had I fought for my rights.
Well, I'm sorry you had that experience, Kay. Thanks for calling. Thanks for calling.
And thank you for your topic today.
Okay.
You guys are really doing good work to bring people together.
This is a preview of Tony's talk tonight as the First Coast Free Thought Society presents her speech on the Religious Freedom Restoration Act. Tony's speaking at the Buckman Bridge Unitarian Church. They are located on Manresa Avenue. This is at 6:30 p.m., and this talk is free and open to the public. Tony Van Pelt, thanks for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for this opportunity.
And much more still ahead later. Culpepper, as the Armada claim the crown of Kings of Florida Soccer. That's later. Also, how the American Legion is reaching out to local veterans this month. But up next, a new and non-invasive treatment option for heart patients on the First Coast. Back in a moment.
We'll be right back. I'm Rick Mullaney, Director of the Public Policy Institute at Jacksonville University. Join me for WJCT's quarterly program, Policy Matters. On each installment, we look at how public policy affects our lives. Join the conversation with former Florida Governor and U.S. Senator Bob Graham and Chris Hamm, former Chief of Staff for Mayor Alvin Brown. That's on the next Policy Matters, Wednesday morning at 9 on 89.9 WJCT.
This is the sound of drama. This is the sound of your community.
Good morning, and live from Studio 5, this is First Coast Connect on 89.
Stay connected. Stay informed. Enjoy live streaming of your favorite local WJCT and PBS and NPR content, all free from your devices. The WJCT app, available now in the Apple App Store and Google Play.
Mad Max Fury Road is unusual for being an action movie with 10 Oscar nominations and for being a car chase film with a female editor. Margaret Sixel focused on more than just the explosions.
I really had to feel that there was an emotional content to a lot of the stunts.
How an editor shapes a movie on the next All Things Considered from NPR News.
Today at 4 on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
On the next Fresh Air, Narconomics, how the business model of drug cartels compares to that of big box stores and fast food chains. We talk with journalist Tom Wainwright. He interviewed one gang leader who was running his operation from prison.
This guy had a great big tattoo going across his forehead, and he complained about managing his staff. He complained about competition with his rivals.
Join us.
Weekdays at noon on 89.9 WJCT, your community, your world.
Welcome back. Well, people who are at risk and considered poor candidates for open heart surgery, well, they now have a new option when it comes to replacing heart valves. Cardiologists at Baptist Heart Specialists, in collaboration with cardiothoracic surgeons at Baptist Heart Hospital, are now offering transcatheter aortic valve replacement, or TAVR. It's a minimally invasive surgical procedure that will replace your valve without removing the old damaged one. February is American Heart Month, and right now we're pleased to welcome interventional cardiologist David Hassel, MD. He's chief of cardiology at Baptist Medical Center, Jacksonville. Dr. Hassel, good to see you.
Thank you. Good morning.
And Baptist, the first in this area in Southeast Georgia to use this technology, it's called CoreValve. Is that right?
That is correct.
So how does it work?
Basically, this is a procedure that was designed for older people who are too high risk to have open heart surgery. The aortic valve is on top of the heart. Its job is to open when the heart contracts. And over the course of time, over years, it begins to calcify and get hard and become more and more difficult to open. Because it's a mechanical problem, the only solution in the past has been to have open heart surgery. Cut open your breastbone, go in and replace the valve, take the old valve out. This new technology allows us to go through the leg on a sheath and replace the indwelling valve that's calcified with another valve that's on a sheath without having to undergo open heart surgery. It's an option for these people who previously had no option.
Wow. You go in through someone's leg.
You go through the leg.
How does that work?
You have an artery in your leg called the femoral artery. It's easily accessible under ultrasound. Sometimes the surgeons do a direct cut down on the artery and we insert a sheath into the artery. And this catheter where the valve is placed goes through that sheath up across the aortic valve, and we deploy the valve right where the old valve is.
This is such a big breakthrough because open heart surgery, cutting open the chest, is so invasive and the recovery time can be so painful and difficult.
It's particularly true in the elderly.
Yeah.
This initially was designed for a population who had no choice. They were turned down for surgery, and people who had this would have a mortality somewhere around 40 to 50% the first year. With this procedure, you cut that in half, and it gives people a chance for regaining a quality of life.
And we do need to know Baptist Health is the title underwriter of this program. And how was Baptist able to become the first medical facility in the area to deploy this new technology?
We were a little late coming to the game.
Oh, okay.
It had been in a couple of hospitals here in town for a year or two. But that kind of worked to our advantage because the core valve, the Medtronic valve, became available just at the time where we were ready to start our program. And they entered into an exclusive agreement with us to have us be the only hospital in the area at the time that it came out to use this valve, which we feel turned out well because it has several advantages over the other valves that we think makes it a better product.
How much demand do you anticipate for this type of procedure?
It is going to increase because while the initial valve was designed for inoperable people, they have now done a new study called Certavi, where they are putting it in intermediate risk people, people who would still be considered candidates for surgery, although at higher risk. I think you're going to see probably within 10 or 15 years, this is going to be the only way this is going to be done.
Really?
Yes.
So the demand will only go up. Of course, it is American Heart Month. You're a cardiologist. People come to you when kind of late in the game when their ticker's already in pretty bad shape. But it bears repeating. People can avoid surgery if they take care of their health, if they eat right, exercise, don't smoke, eat lots of fruits and vegetables, all that common sense advice.
Absolutely true. Not every elderly person develops aortic stenosis. It happens more in the same risk factor category of people who have coronary disease, people who have high blood pressure, people who smoke, people who are diabetic. So yes, lifestyle changes can certainly avoid many of these problems.
Now, if people need more information on TAVR at Baptist, they need to give you guys a call.
Yes, they can. They can go on our website, ebaptisthealth.com, and access that. We also have a patient coordinator whose number is 202-9500, and they can give you information in regards to this procedure.
Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
He's Dr. David Hassel, Chief of Cardiology at Baptist Medical Center, Jacksonville. Again, that's the new TAVR procedure here in town. Still to come, sports with Cole as the Armada become the soccer kings of Florida. Plus, the American Legion, reaching out to local veterans. How you can take advantage of important benefits if you've served this country. That's next.
WJCT and the Florida Theater are proud to bring me, Michael Feldman, and my show, What Do You Know, to the Florida Theater in Jacksonville on February 20th. We'll do the quiz, have some fun, enjoy the southern winter just a little bit. You bring the sunshine, I'll bring the sunscreen. Tickets available now at the Florida Theater box office by phone at 904-355-2787 or online at floridatheater.com.
Sponsored in part by Folio Media House.
We are mostly water, but in the U.S., we mostly don't think about it.
We're spoiled in the United States. We think of it as though it were the air, infinite and inexhaustible, when in fact it's not.
An hour devoted to how recent problems with water have dealt a wake-up splash to all of our faces. That's next time on The Takeaway from WNYC and PRI Public Radio International.
Weekdays at 2 on 89.9 WJCT.
When we think of people making history, presidents, generals, and influential community leaders are often the first to come to mind. I'm Ben Brotmarkle, and coming up on Florida Frontiers, the weekly radio magazine of the Florida Historical Society, we'll discuss everyday people making history. We'll look at how railroads impacted our state's development and talk about early horse racing in Florida. That's Florida Frontiers, Monday evening at 6:30 on 89.9 WJCT.
I'm Jeb Sharp from The World. Journalist Rupa Shenoy is the child of immigrants. Her parents came from India. Rupa was born and raised in Iowa.
And that leads to certain experiences that I share with many people who don't belong, who are between cultures.
Their stories tell us a whole lot about America today. Now there's a podcast about that, Otherhood, next time on The World.
Weekday afternoons at 3 on 89.9 WJCT.
Well, military veterans in and around Jacksonville have a special opportunity next week. Two service sessions will take place as all active duty, National Guard, Reserve, and wartime veterans in the region are invited to come out and learn more about the American Legion and the veteran benefits they offer. past National Commander Clarence Hill and District Auxiliary President Annie Anderson are here to tell us all about it. Good morning to you both.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks so much for being with us. Past National Commander Clarence Hill, let's start with you. The American Legion having two sessions, one in Jacksonville, one in Atlantic Beach. These are coming up Thursday, February 18th through Saturday, the 20th. What's going to be happening?
Well, we'll have staff members from the national organization in Indianapolis and from the state organization in Orlando that will be bringing lists of expired members who have let their dues lapsed or belong to the at-large post and have never affiliated with a local post, and just veterans in general. And we'll be making phone calls from 10 o'clock in the morning to 2 o'clock in the afternoon to try to entice them to join the American Legion or to affiliate with a local post. And that'll be at the Atlantic Beach Post on Atlantic Boulevard and at the North Jacks Post on Benedict Road.
Very nice. And Annie Anderson, the American Legion, almost 100 years old, one of the strongest advocates in the land for veterans' benefits. What are some of the benefits for local veterans to joining up and being part of this organization?
The main object of the American Legion Auxiliary is we're a civilian patriotic service organization supporting the American Legion and also the military, the veterans, and their families. So I was advising our auxiliary members to come and meet the national and the department staff this coming week.
So it's an opportunity to meet some of these leaders and also learn about possible benefits that people can access. Is that
correct?
Right?
We'll have our certified service officers available that if you have any issues with the VA, whether it be an initial claim or an appeal, our service officers will be available to help with those claims. And they're available whether you join the American Legion or not. Every post has someone. We send them to the convention to certify once a year. So they're up to date on the latest in the VA, and we provide that service free of charge to anyone that's a veteran.
And is that the most common complaint you're getting, veterans having trouble accessing care through the VA?
Not necessarily accessing care, but having problems getting benefits from the VA or or with their claims throughout the whole process. I personally have not heard of access problems here in Jacksonville.
It's a claim issue.
It's more
processing
claims. Correct.
And how does
there are access problems nationwide, but here locally, I haven't heard of any.
How does the American Legion act as an advocate for veterans, especially when it comes to this type of problem?
Well, they're the ones who will help the veterans with the VA claims and also contact the VA. We are here to support the veterans, even if they are not a Legionnaire, or if they need help for us, if they need food, if they need like housing items. We collect these throughout the year and we deliver them to the organization to give those to the veterans that are placed into the housing. We're basically here for them as a support group. Mm-hmm. And we work with the American Legion and contact them to let us know where we can help.
And with this being such an active military community, the demand must be pretty high.
It normally is, yes. Our service officer at my post stays fairly busy. Yeah, of course, we're 5 miles from Mayport Naval Station, so
yeah,
he tends to stay busy.
Well, again, if you're just tuning in, military veterans need to mark their calendars for two special service sessions next week. This is open to all active duty, National Guard, Reserve, and wartime veterans from any foreign war. You are eligible to come to these free sessions to learn more about the American Legion, veteran benefits, how they can help you deal with any issues you may be having with the VA, and much, much more. Again, these are happening Thursday, February 18th through Saturday, February 20th from 10 to 4 p.m. at the American Legion Post 197 on Benedict Road in Jacksonville and American Legion Post 316. That's on Atlantic Boulevard in Atlantic Beach. People can come out at any time during those 3 days and meet you.
Correct.
Correct. Basically, the time
is... And there will be members. There are 19 posts in this 5th District, and there'll be members from some of those other posts that'll be at one of those two sites to speak on behalf of their post.
All right. Well, thank you both so much for joining us. He's past National Commander Clarence Hill and District Auxiliary President Annie Anderson. Again, these sessions are coming up next week, one in Jacksonville and one at the beaches. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Culpepper's up next as the Armada roll on to championship status in Florida. That and the rest of his sports right after this.
Follow what's happening at WJCT, even when you're away from your radio. You can follow WJCT on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You can listen live online to WJCT-FM at wjct.org/listen, or on iTunes Radio or TuneIn Radio. And you can hear all of your favorite WJCT-FM shows anytime on demand on iTunes and Stitcher. Wherever you are, WJCT is there.
I'm Rick Mullaney, Director of the Public Policy Institute at Jacksonville University. Join me for WJCT's quarterly program, Policy Matters. On each installment, we look at how public policy affects our lives. Join the conversation with former Florida Governor and U.S. Senator Bob Graham and Chris Hamm, former Chief of Staff for Mayor Alvin Brown. That's on the next Policy Matters, Wednesday morning at 9 on 89.9 WJCT.
Even in tough economic times, there are many local stories of success. I'm Karen Mathis with the Daily Record. On First Coast Success, I speak with Northeast Florida business executives and entrepreneurs about their experiences and accomplishments. Hear the interviews the last Monday of each month on First Coast Connect or on demand at wjctnews.org.
Brought to you in part by Iberia Bank.
Big day at the job. Make it break time. They're all waiting for you right now in the conference room. Well, they're going to have to wait because you're not leaving the radio until you hear the end of that story. Snap judgment from NPR. Storytelling with a beat. Do not miss it.
Sundays at 1 on 89.9 WJCT.
Welcome back. Still time to reserve your spot for the great First Coast Connect treasure hunt on Jekyll Island. Join travel expert Judy Wells and me at the new Seaside Westin Hotel up on Jekyll along the beautiful Georgia coast, February 19th and 20th, as we host a Friday night wine tasting and Saturday beach combing scavenger hunt for those famous Jekyll Island glass globes. They've become a beloved island tradition. Three-course gourmet dinner also included and breakfast. Judy and I will host all meals and wine tasting and lead the treasure hunt. Join us. It's going to be so much fun. Get all the details at Judy's website. It's wellsworld.net. Well, finally this hour, the Armada can claim to be the kings of Florida soccer after beating Orlando City over the weekend.
I'm a pepper, he's a pepper, she's a pepper, we're a pepper. Wouldn't you like to be a pepper too?
Culpepper here now with more about the Armada's victory and the rest of the weekend's sports, including those curling championships. Good to see you.
Good to see you as well. By the way, I don't know how you get that gig to go up to
Jekyll Island.
Jekyll Island experience. That's a good gig.
Yeah, I did something right. I don't know what I did right. It's going to be pretty nice, though.
Make friends with Judy. Always good thing.
Yeah, it's good to know Judy Wells. That's all I can say.
No doubt. Let me set the scene for you on Saturday night at Community First Park at the baseball grounds. Several busloads of Orlando City fans come to town. They have a ardent and growing fan base. They had over 60,000 for their first ever game down in the Citrus Bowl. Mm-hmm. They've got a big following. They're the only MLS club in the state. So they come in. They've got the banners and the flags and the drums and everything else. And one of the flags that one of the supporters for Orlando City was waving was Kings of Florida Soccer.
Uh-huh.
And they're sitting there waving this right down below where we were in the broadcast booth, calling the game. And early on, it looked like, yeah, that's exactly what it was going to be. Orlando really dominated, and but only had a one-goal lead on a free kick from the former World Player of the Year, Kaká, one-name Brazilian guy. And but the Armada came back in the second half. In the opening 15 minutes of the second half, came out and scored two, held on to win 2-1. Mm-hmm. And I asked the question afterwards, do the Armada get that flag now? Do they get the Kings of Florida soccer flag? It's just a preseason game.
Right.
But it's the first time that any team in Florida has beaten Orlando City since they've gone to MLS.
I thought we agreed they are the hated Orlando City.
Hated
Orlando City.
And so Tony Meola's team has now beaten two MLS teams in the preseason. You can't always just take the result and say that tells you everything you need to know. But I can tell you just from my eyes that the Armada looked like a much better team than they were a year ago.
Very nice.
And so I think we're in for some fun. And I also know the atmosphere at the park for a preseason match was something that a lot of folks, it felt like a game for a playoff spot with the supporters groups on either side going back and forth. And I know a lot of folks who attended the match really enjoyed it. And there's one more NASL versus MLS preseason matchup coming up as the Armada hosts the New York Red Bulls, who should be an even better mm-hmm. team than Orlando, by the way.
Really?
That's on February 27th.
I like their name.
New York Red Bulls.
Yeah, that's a good name.
And obviously the main sponsor is pretty obvious
Bull,
in there.
Red Bull, yeah, sure.
But that'll be a 6 o'clock start a week from this Saturday at Community First Park. But a great start to things for Tony Meola.
Okay, well, kudos to them. Let's talk high school lacrosse. That's actually a sport that's growing in this area.
It really is. We don't spend a lot of time talking about lacrosse. You know, most of the time it's football or soccer or something. But I was last night at JU where they were hosting their annual lacrosse event over yesterday and over the weekend and into today. And yesterday was JU against Monmouth in college lacrosse. But today, basically...
Wait a minute, did you say Monmouth? Monmouth College?
Monmouth Hawks, yeah, from New Jersey.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Yeah, okay.
So they and Monmouth beat JU, but all the way through today, from basically morning till night, there are high school teams that are going to be competing at JU as well as part of this lacrosse classic. And it is a real growing sport, and it's interesting in talking with athletic directors and people in sports administration. One of the things that really draws especially medium-sized colleges, but then some larger colleges as well to this, is that it's a sport where you have a lot of family participation.
Uh-huh.
You know, a lot of times, particularly if you come from New York or Maryland or someplace where there's a lot of history with lacrosse,
right.
Dad played, granddad played, whatever. And there's also, frankly, some money in it because it's usually families who have some money
yeah.
and they're willing to really get invested into a new team. So JU and one of the rare teams in the South playing mm-hmm. lacrosse, but they've done a great job launching the program.
And the athletic build out at JU has been really impressive. They've built out quite a few different sports over the last few years.
Yeah, and one of the things that I think they're going to have to handle going forward is how do they balance football with these other sports?
Yeah.
And that's a big question. The basketball team is probably gives them the best opportunity to get national recognition
mm-hmm.
on a large scale. I mean, you see what UNF did last year when they made a run into the NCAA tournament. And that's a big marketing opportunity for a school. And for basketball, that's certainly where that would lie for JU, a chance to get into the big dance. But they have other sports that have done extremely well. Track has been a great women's track has been a great team and sport there for JU for years under Ron Griggs. So they've got mm-hmm. They've been able to push some of these things forward. Baseball is another opportunity to get into the public spotlight. Figuring out how they're going to balance that with football is really a big challenge right now for JU.
Absolutely. Now, our own Lindsay Kilbride had the opportunity to head over to the arena with you and check out the curling championships.
Yep. Which have now wrapped up.
Which have wrapped up. But it's my understanding you're a pretty decent curler.
Well,
Cole
as it
Pepper.
Turns out, I had a suspicion, Melissa, that I would never be an Olympian. I thought that might be the case.
You saw yourself a little short
I'm not saying... I'm not going to make the 100-meter dash. I'm probably not going to do the, the ski jump.
Right, right, right.
But...
Like that movie preview
Eddie
I just
Eagle.
Saw where the kid in England, he becomes this world-class ski jumper.
Well,
that's not you.
That's not me.
Okay.
But if there's a chance that I could be an Olympian, it might just be in curling.
That's right.
And particularly in talking to the captain of the eventual winning team, the skip, the prime years for a skip are in, late 30s, early to mid 40s.
I don't know.
So, you know, I'm right in there.
They do it part-time.
Yeah, well, they have to.
You know?
Nobody will pay
no
curlers
one'll pay
enough
them.
to do it. But we had a lot of fun over there, and I think it was a neat turnout. And to see, we went over there at one point, and they have this learn to curl little opportunity.
Yeah.
Which
do Lindsay, people come out for that?
Yeah, and Lindsay caught me on video on her Twitter feed. So if you go to @LindsayKilbride, you can see my my throw. And
yeah.
Not too shabby.
Not too shabby, yeah. Culpepper.
Thank you.
Very impressive.
The post curl is always the highlight, though.
You curl your bicep lifting the stein of beer
yes, exactly.
to your lips.
Which I've done yeah. with Olympian ability for years.
And last but not least, Daytona is next Sunday. Here we are again with the 500.
Yeah, and it's sort of an historic Daytona 500 because they've rebuilt a major renovation on the grandstand. So it's going to be a different kind of experience for those who have gone down there. I'm not sure how that's going to impact how it's presented on television because, you know, most of the attention is paid to the cars and when the cars go into the pits. But it's going to be interesting to see. One thing that motorsports has to figure out as well from a sports business standpoint is how do you continue to create these opportunities for people to come and have this social experience at the race when you can sit at home with your 55-inch, you know, 4K TV uh-huh. and get such great coverage that TV now provides.
Well, I always know when the Daytona rolls around because I get a text from my aunt and uncle in downstate Illinois. We're on our way. It's their annual trip to the Florida coast. And it's a reminder to me that the race is coming again. They're actually down there right now. And if you want to follow all the sports action, just follow Cole on Twitter, @ColePepper. Always good to see you. See you next time.
Thanks, Melissa.
And that's our show. Thanks to all of our guests and callers. Our producer is Sean Birch. The show theme composed and performed by the Jacksonville Symphony Orchestra's Pyotr Shevchuk. Get our podcast every day. Subscribe at iTunes or Stitcher. And you can watch the show now. Video on demand at our partner TVJax.com. Next on Die and Ream, the late Supreme Court Justice Antonin Scalia was the leading conservative voice on the High Court. Scalia's life and legacy and the battle ahead over the makeup of the nation's highest court. That discussion's next. I'm Melissa Ross, and you're listening to First Coast Connect on 89.9 WJCT-FM Jacksonville. Your community, your world. We'll be right back here again at 9 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day.
Support for First Coast Connect is provided by Baptist Health and the North Florida TPO.